Radio Prague News.
The Prague Pride Festival of Sexual Minorities has kicked off in the Czech capital. Czech health insurance companies run under the lowest operating costs in Europe, according to an OECD report. And members of the Czech Olympic team are returning from London. The second installment of the Prague Pride Festival of Sexual Minorities kicked off in the Czech capital on Monday. The festival program offers some 80 concerts, exhibitions, parties, debates and other events. The festival, held under the auspices of Prague Mayor Bohuslav Soboda, received backing from 11 embassies, including those of the US, UK, Switzerland and others. For their part, Czech conservative groups have voiced protests against the festival, dismissing it as an expression of homosexualism. The festival will culminate on Saturday with a march through the city centre. The operating costs of Czech health insurance companies are the lowest in Europe, according to an OECD report released on Monday. Over the last 20 years, the costs decreased from 12 to 3.2% of the company's total expenses. The OECD list of insurance firms by their operational cost is topped by Germany, where the expenses amount to 6.8%. Experts say that the operating costs in the Czech Republic were driven down by competition among various health insurers. The country's largest health insurance company, the VZP, has 6 million clients, followed by the Czech Interior Ministry's insurer, with around 1.2 million clients. Most Czechs are content with the services provided by their mobile phone operator, according to a survey by the marketing firm GfK Czech, released on Monday. Nearly 70% of those polled expressed general satisfaction with their current operators. The same number of respondents, however, said they would consider switching to a new operator if it were to offer much cheaper rates. The Czech Telecommunications Authority has launched an auction of frequencies, which could result in the arrival of a fourth mobile phone operator at the Czech market, currently dominated by Vodafone, T-Mobile and Telefonica O2. A court in Prague on Monday handed pop singer Dara Rollins a suspended sentence of 2 years in prison for causing an accident that killed a 58-year-old motorcycle rider. The court said that the Slovak-born, Prague-based singer was driving in the opposite lane of the road when the accident happened, on the outskirts of Prague in 2010. Her car then crashed into the man, who later died in hospital. The court also took the 39-year-old singer's driver's license and sentenced her to pay some 4 million crowns in damages. Ms. Rollins' lawyers said they would appeal the verdict. The police have arrested a gang of 6 Romanian citizens in Prague who allegedly committed a series of brutal robberies, the police said. The gang mainly targeted warehouses with construction material and electronics. They would attack the security staff and inflict serious injuries on the personnel. On at least one occasion, they also robbed a gambling bar in Prague. The police said the damages amounted to 3.5 million crowns. If convicted, the man will face up to 12 years in jail. Members of the Czech Olympic team are returning to Prague from London on Monday on 2 special flights. The first plane, which landed at Prague's Gbely Airport at 1:30 p.m., carried the bronze crew of the men's 4 kayak. The second aircraft, which is set to arrive at 8:30, will carry gold medalist Barbora Špotáková, David Svoboda and Jaroslav Kulhavý. The Czech team won 10 medals at the 30th Summer Olympic Games, 4 gold, 3 silver and 3 bronze medals, which ranked the Czech Republic 19th in the medal tally. And finally, a brief look at the weather. The next few days will be mostly overcast with occasional showers and storms. Daytime highs should range between 23 and 27 degrees Celsius. My name is Jan Richter and it's the end of the news.
You're listening to Radio Prague, the international service of Czech radio. I'm Daniela Lazarová. Coming up in today's program, the Olympic Games are over and Czech athletes are coming home with their heads held high. We'll bring you a final Olympics package and sports report. In today's one-on-one, we'll be talking to music composer Marko Ivanovic and we'll end the show with a Czech lesson as usual. So do please stay with us. On the last day of the Olympics, the Czech team managed to sweeten their already successful run in London with two more gold medals in men's mountain biking and pentathlon. The Czech Olympians can return home with heads held high, having won four more medals than in Beijing and one more gold than 4 years ago. But the successes of the Czech delegation can be measured not only in the number of medals won, but also in the publicity it drew both in London and on the home turf. Marsha Volinsky reports.
The global economic downturn was the silent backdrop for this year's Olympic Games. Some economic analysts claim that crisis-hit countries like Portugal, Ireland, Greece, and Spain won fewer medals than in 2008 because of slashed state funding for sports. Public financial support for sports in the Czech Republic has also suffered in the past years, in large part due to the bankruptcy of the lottery company Sazka, who was required by law to contribute to sports funding. Yet this year's Olympic success may prompt a reevaluation of the amounts allocated to the Czech Olympic Committee and sports as a whole. Education, Youth and Sport Minister Peter Fiala made a cautious promise of more funds as fans celebrated the fourth gold at the Czech House in London on Sunday.
It's a fantastic success. We won 10 medals, 4 gold. We won only 6 in Beijing. I think it undoubtedly shows how well Czech sport is doing right now. The education ministry gives almost 3 billion crowns towards sports. Of course, I'm aware of the situation that resulted from the bankruptcy of Sazka and the changes in the lottery law. We are working hard on finding a solution to the situation. It's important for the government to support not only high-level sports, but a wide range of sporting activities for youngsters as well.
Besides appreciation from their fans, Czech medal winners will also receive financial remuneration for their success. In addition to potential private sponsorship pay, Czech gold medalists received 1.5 million crowns for their accomplishment. Although some countries paid out much greater sums, the Czech Republic was more generous this year toward their sports people than, for example, Germany, Canada, or Australia. Czech silver medalist in whitewater slalom Vavřinec Hradílek had this to say about the 750,000 crowns he's taking home.
We are not a big sport, and given the kind of expenses that we have, many of which I have to finance myself, this money will come in useful.
The Czechs also made a name for themselves outside of the sporting events in London. The jokingly stylish Wellington boots at the opening ceremony, the giant double-decker doing push-ups in Islington, and the Czech House itself drew a lot of attention. The Associated Press dubbed the Czech House a giant party playpen, awarding it the gold medal from among many national hospitality houses that were open during the Olympics around London. The Czechs managed to escape the usual Švejk-inspired image of themselves as low-key, self-deprecating people, and earned a reputation for being eccentric and even wacky. But the Czech House in Islington was not only a fun-loving, Pilsner-filled introduction to a lesser-known Central European nation, it was also an opportunity for Czech business to show itself to the world. Czech Industry and Trade Ministry launched a program a year ago that was to help Czech companies present themselves in London during the Olympics. Of course, most visitors to the Czech House focus more on the entertainment and the culinary offering. According to the organizers, each one of the more than 78,000 visitors that the house welcomed over the 14 days had, on average, one Pilsner beer. Overall, visitors consumed almost 5,000 knedlicky dumplings with their goulash, which was deemed by international commentators to be just a bit too pricey at £17 a plate.
Marsha Volinsky with that story, and now to report on individual successes at the Olympics. Here is Dominic Yoon with Monday's Sports Roundup.
Mm.
On Wednesday, 25-year-old Liberec-born athlete Zuzana Hejnová won bronze in the women's 400 metres hurdles. The 2011 European Team Championship winner came in with a time of 53.38 seconds, pipped at the post by American silver medal winner Lashinda Demus, who came in with a time of 52.77, and the Russian gold medal winner Natalia Antiuk, who came in with a time of 52.70. This is Hejnová's first medal in a major tournament and the first Czech Olympic athletics sprint medal in 32 years. A day later, on Thursday, came another bronze, this time for the men's K4 1,000-metre canoeing team of Josef Dostal, Daniel Havel, Jan Sterba and Lukáš Trefil. The quartet came in with a time of 2 minutes 55.8, just a hair's breadth behind the gold and silver medal winners, Australia and Hungary, respectively. Indeed, the difference between the gold and bronze winners was a mere 0.765 seconds. The Czech team had a poor start to the final race, but managed to make up for it with a powerful finish. This was the first Olympic medal for the Czech Republic in the canoe sprint for 16 years, the last being a gold for the country's best-known canoer, Martin Doktor, at the 1996 Games in Atlanta. And Thursday proved to be a particularly auspicious day for the Czech team in London, as 31-year-old Jablonec nad Nisou-born athlete Barbora Špotáková won gold in the women's javelin throw. The world record-holding athlete dominated the competition. Her longest out of four throws reached 69.55 metres. All of Špotáková's throws were further than any single attempt by any of the other 12 finalists. This latest win makes the javelin the most successful Czech Olympic sport in history. Czechoslovakia won its first gold in women's javelin in 1952. And here is Špotáková describing her final and best throw of the finals.
I decided to take a risk and use a different javelin. It was one that I had never thrown with before, and I think that this helped me a little, as I immediately felt more comfortable holding the javelin and aligning it with my eye, and those are really the basics to getting a throw right. For some reason, I just didn't feel entirely happy with the ones I'd been using, so I began to experiment, and it ended up turning out well.
And we have more gold medals to report. The first is in the men's modern pentathlon. While Olympic women's pentathlon hopeful Natalia Dianova only managed a 19th place finish on Sunday, the men's gold medal was won a day earlier by 27-year-old Prague-born athlete David Svoboda. Svoboda came in first in fencing, seventh in swimming, first in riding, and also topped the joint running and shooting competition. Overall, Svoboda came in with 5,928 points. The silver medal winner, Chinese Zhong Rong Chao, came in with 5,904. The Czech dramatically overtook his competitor in the final race, recovering from a stumble early in the shooting stage. This is the best win for the Czechs in the sport since winning silver in the 1976 Olympics in Montreal. After his win, Svoboda said he was in a state of euphoria and felt like he was floating 2 meters above the ground. The Czech Republic, which in London has won the most medals since the 1996 Games in Atlanta, and which ended up in 19th place in the final medal count, can surely share in some of those emotions. And finally, on Sunday, the Czech Republic's medal count climbed to 10 as 27-year-old Jaroslav Kulhavý won gold in the men's cross-country cycling tournament. The event took place in Hadley Farm in Essex and covered 4.9 kilometres. Kulhavý came in with a winning time of 1 hour, 29 minutes and 7 seconds, just 1 second in front of silver medal winner Nino Schröter of Switzerland.
Dominic Yoon with a sports roundup. Now, opera performances are generally not crowd pullers, but the new opera Enchantia, which premiered in January of 2012 at the Prague National Theatre, was sold out in a matter of weeks. Families with children of all ages literally swarmed to the opera house, eager for a glimpse of the magic land. Directed by Petr Forman, one of the twin sons of Miloš Forman, and composed by Marko Ivanovic, Enchantia became a phenomenon, disproving the view that opera is a dead genre. Composer Marko Ivanovic is Jaromír Pavlík's guest on today's One-on-One.
Mm.
Marko Ivanovic is a young composer and conductor with Czech and Serbian roots. Since his early 20s, he has won countless music awards. Based in the Czech Chamber Philharmonic Orchestra Pardubice, as a chief conductor, he doesn't seem to be limited in his composing career. In January, along with director Petr Forman, they introduced us to the enchanting world of the magic book, Good Unicorns, Gryphons, Helpful Mermaids and a Bag Cockatrices, a world where a girl named Penelope walks hand in hand with a cowardly parrot and friendly toad to save the magic world. A world inspired by Gerald Durrell's book, The Talking Parcel.
We spent about 1 year making research between many, many titles, and we found this particular book very useful and very interesting and challenging for making opera of it.
Definitely your choice was right. I knew the opera performances were sold out for a long time in advance. Did you expect such a success?
Well, we hoped, but we was also surprised and pleased. I spent 3 years of my life, which I devoted to this title, and I'm very happy that the audience like it, especially because this is opera for families, for children and for their parents. And it's always a bit of challenge because, you know, young audience is always very tricky in some way, and it's very difficult to find way how to catch their attention, and especially when we are talking about opera and when we are talking about opera which lasts approximately 90 minutes. We never knew when we planned it how it will work at the end, and first performances we were very excited and curious how children audience will accept it.
People live their lives in a very fast way. Your opera is 90 minutes long, which is approximately as long as an average movie. Do you think this is the future of the opera?
This particular opera was created for families, for children. We had to have in our minds their possibilities of how to keep attention of children. It's always difficult. But generally, in the recent history, we could find many experiments with the length of opera. We witnessed a very interesting title called Einstein on the Beach by Philip Glass, which lasted approximately 5 or 6 hours. But on the other hand, we have very short operas, for instance, by Maurizio Kagel. It's very difficult to say what is real future of opera, because for many people, opera is very traditional type of music, type of drama. They imagine Verdi and Wagner as some kind of leaders of this style. But for me, opera is basically every artistic piece which combines music and drama in some kind of balance. And this kind of artistic way is for me very open to the future, and it will always interest very specific kind of audience and wide range of audience. So opera, in this wider meaning of that word, has a future, but of course not in the way how many people now imagine opera should sound like.
For a composer and a conductor, how important is the multimedia part of the opera, the visual part?
I think today is much more important than it used to be, but we could find in history of opera, in some periods of developing of opera, there was less or more stretch on a visual side. Today, of course, a visual side is dominant in opera, also in traditional operas. When we see it when we read reviews in newspapers, very rarely we can see depicting of conductor's work or about attitude towards some specific way of music creating of opera. The main base of reviews is about what we see, about directing, about costumes. As a musician, I'm a little bit sad about it, but that's reality, because of course we are surrounded by movies, by TV, and we are much more focused on visual side than our parents or grandparents. But opera in general was always built on struggle between visual side, between drama, and between music. So today is always big task for all creators of opera, how to make this that what Wagner calls Gesamtkunstwerk. It means work which combines many medias. Let's say opera is multimedia genre from its beginning. It was built in the 17th century as multimedia artistic approach.
Somebody who is listening to our interview right now might think that the opera world is embedded in some kind of the capsule. I think by Enchantia you broke it, right?
Well, our intention when we wrote Enchantia was to... It was exactly what you now said. We wanted to open the world of opera for people who never were in theater, who never were in opera, and to show them some basic rules about it, how traditional opera works. We used storyline of Talking Pastel as the basis for this. We decided to create some enchanted world, Enchantia. Audience, they are actually coming into that world, which already exists before they come in and exists after they leave theater. This world has its specific rules, which are rules of opera. It means that actors or people who live in that world, they don't speak, they sing. Some of that people, when they are moved by some strong emotion, they suddenly stop acting and they are singing their song aria. They want to express themselves by aria. This kind of strange behavior we wanted to show to the audience and maybe to prepare young audience for some other operatic pieces in their future life.
Let's hit on another note. You became a father recently. I remember when my sister was little, she was listening to music when she was trying to fall asleep at night. Her favorite was the Lion King movie soundtrack. Would you dream of your kid listening to Enchantia before falling asleep?
Well, it's very difficult. I'm father just now for 14 days, so we have some other duties to do before I can ask myself these questions. But of course, I will be very pleased if my kids will like my opera. When I wrote the opera, I have a niece. I dedicated this piece to them. I'm just a little bit aware if my own kids will sometimes be angry because of that. My task is to write some better piece, another better piece for kids to dedicate it to my own kids.
Your job range is quite wide. Besides conducting and composing, you also cooperate with various artists like Jarek Nohavica, for instance. Can you tell our listeners what your main job is?
I'm conductor and composer, and I'm lucky that I still didn't have to choose between these two. So I compose and conduct. I'm chief conductor of Pardubice Chamber Philharmony. I cooperate with many orchestras and choirs around and theaters around Czech Republic mostly. And I compose as well, music for theaters, movies, and operas. And I'm also arranger of music. So when I talk about myself, I must say I'm a musician, and that's it.
Okay, let's speak about your future plans. Maybe to sleep a little bit more now?
We are in the middle of summer, so I slept already enough. The big task in front of me is conductor's task. There are many conductor's tasks, and one of them is making new contemporary opera by Vladimir Franz. I don't know specifically English title of it, Válka smlky by Karel Čapek. It's interesting title, it's interesting composer, and I think it will be interesting and challenging work. So that's one of the biggest tasks in front of me. And as a composer, there are some plans which I don't want to talk about it right now because they are still just in my head and in the head of people who wants to realize it. So hopefully in next year I will start to work again on some bigger work.
The opera will be directed by David Rábek, very well-known director, and maybe you will cooperate with a future president. How do you feel about that?
It's very funny. I know Vladimir Franz very well from the school because he is also professor on Academy of Music. We know each other very well, But we never cooperated, so that's why I'm very curious about it. We have our first meeting next week, so we will see.
Have your wife ever inspired you to anything in your composing?
My wife is a very good advisor to me. She is an actress and singer and songwriter, but in different style that I'm in. She's like folk song writer. She has a very good ear, and I like her opinions. So mostly everything I write, I show first to her. She tells me her first opinions about it, and she's a very good advisor to me. So that's this kind of inspiration what I really need, because you know, when you are in something too much, when you write, when you devote a lot of time to something, then you simply lost this kind of overview. So you need somebody to tell, how to say, with blank ear what you actually wrote. So that's why I really appreciate my wife.
Composer Marko Ivanović was Jaromír Pavlík's guest on One-on-One. And now in the time left to us, we're offering you another part in Pavla Horáková's popular language series, The ABCs of Czech.
Jedna, dvě, tři, čtyři, pět, zasta kubé, zasta snět, brambury pečený, ty já mívám večeři, brambury pečený, ty já mívám večeři.
You are listening to Radio Prague's special Czech language course, Czech by Numbers, which explores numbers and their usage in everyday Czech speech. Today, Dita Siedu and I will be looking at numbers to do with living and housing. If you look into any Czech real estate magazine or at an online catalogue, you will be overwhelmed by numbers. In fact, the first page on a real estate server where you first specify your demand is all numbers. If you are looking for a flat in Prague, for example, it will ask you which district from Prague 1,
Praha 1,
to Prague 10.
Praha 10.
Then there is the size of the flat. If it is given in square meters, it is quite understandable. But how about those strange numbers and acronyms? A foreigner has no way of knowing what a 2 plus 1,
2 plus 1,
or 3 plus KK,
3 plus KK,
means. Well, the first figure always states the number of bedrooms, or rather habitable rooms with the exception of kitchen. The number 1,
jedna,
or the letters after the plus sign, specify the type of kitchen in the flat. The acronym KK or
KK
stands for
Kuchyňský kout,
literally a kitchen corner, that is, a kitchenette. Then you will probably like to know which floor your flat is on. In Czech, the ground floor
přízemí
counts as 0, and the one above is the first floor.
První patro.
And so on. But real estate agents like to make things look nicer, so they will call the ground floor
první nadzemní podlaží,
that is, the first above the ground floor, to make it sound more attractive. There are also apartment categories. They have survived from before the fall of communism and specify whether a flat has central heating, hot water, a flush toilet, etc. Things that we now take for granted but weren't so natural only a couple of decades ago in some old buildings. So a first category flat,
byt první kategorie,
has all the amenities and is in a good condition. The higher the number of the category, the poorer the state of the apartment. Double glazing,
dvojitá skla,
is something absolutely natural and has been as far as anyone can remember in this country. But these days, especially in noisy cities, you may require your flat to have triple glazing,
trojitá skla,
to reduce the noise. And that is all for today's edition. Next time we'll be back with some more Czech expressions using numbers. Till then, goodbye.
Naschledanou.
Naschledanou. That was Pavla Horáková with another Czech lesson, which has brought us to the end of today's program. You'll find us at radio.cz. Should you like to contact us, then our email address is english@radio.cz. We'll be happy to hear from you, as always. This is Daniela Lazarová saying thanks for listening and take care.